Good afternoon, and welcome to the recording of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, September 18th. I'm your reader, Bob Young. Turning to the front page, we see that The Courier is predicting clouds and sun today, with a high of only 66 and a low of 44 tonight. Articles on the front page are Absentee Vote Ruling Will Stand, At Your Service, Gordman's Will Close Waterloo Location, and let's start with Iowa Post's third worst virus rate in nation. Des Moines, followed by the Associated Press. Iowa on Thursday reported more than 900 new confirmed coronavirus cases and 14 deaths in the past 24 hours. A federal report said the state has one of the nation's highest infection rates. As of Thursday morning, Iowa Department of Public Health data show 918 new confirmed cases in the past 24 hours, raising the state total to 76,965 known positive cases. An additional 14 people died for a total of 1,248 deaths attributed to COVID-19 since March. The data also show an increasing number of children under age 17 have tested positive for the virus, with the total now 5,929 young people. That's an increase of 389 cases since Monday. More than 2,700 educators have tested positive for the virus. In a report released Sunday, the White House Coronavirus Task Force continued to place Iowa in the red zone for cases. Iowa has the nation's third highest rate for new cases per 100,000 people. The task force noted Iowa has seen a decrease in new cases in the past week. The report repeated a recommendation that Iowa implement a statewide mask mandate. Governor Kim Reynolds insists a mandate wouldn't be effective and isn't needed. Absentee vote ruling will stand. Des Moines by the Associated Press. The Iowa Supreme Court is refusing to review lower court decisions that invalidated tens of thousands of voters' absentee ballot requests at the urging of President Trump's re-election campaign. The court issued orders Wednesday denying requests to put rulings in Linn and Woodbury counties on hold. The elections commissioners in those counties and affected voter and Democratic-aligned groups had asked the court to intervene, saying thousands of voters would be inconvenienced and potentially disenfranchised if the rulings stand. The court rejected all of their requests without explanation. The county sent absentee ballot requests to registered voters filled with their personal information, including names, addresses, dates of birth, voting PIN numbers. Voters had to review, sign, and return the forms to request absentee ballots, which will be mailed beginning October 5th. The Trump campaign and Republican Party groups sued, contending the pre-filled forms violated a directive from Secretary of State Paul Pate and that they must be blank when mailed to voters. Judges Ian Thornhill and Patrick Tott ruled in Trump's favor, ordering the counties in Johnson County to not process any of the pre-filled absentee ballot requests. About 80,000 voters in the three counties had already returned such forms. Now, they'll have to either fill out new blank absentee ballot requests or vote in person on Election Day. Gordman's Will Close Waterloo Location, filed by Kristen Guess. Waterloo, the end has come for a century-old retailer with a store at Crossroads Center. Discount retailer Gordman's at 2060 Crossroads Boulevard, Suite 200, will shutter on September 27th. The future of the mall looks bleak, with the loss of nearly all of its anchor stores. In January 2015, JCPenney announced it would close. The space was replaced by the At Home store in 2016. Sears closed in April 2018, followed by Yonkers in August 2018. 8 days later, Dillard's announced it would close as well, leaving At Home the sole remaining anchor store. Gordman's was founded by Russian immigrant Sam Richman in 1915 in Omaha, Nebraska, as Richman's. In 1956, the founder's son-in-law, Dan Gordman, bought the firm which was later acquired by his grandson, Jeff Gordman. In 1993, the name was changed to the Half Price Store. The Half Price Store in 1993 opened its Crossroads location, taking over 56,000 square foot space formerly occupied by Farmore. The name was formally changed to Gordman's in 2000, and the chain eventually was acquired by Sun Capital Partners, ending 90 years of family ownership. A mysterious campaign strategy took over the Cedar Valley that year when people wearing T-shirts emblazoned with a G began surprising folks with random acts of kindness. They gave away candy, flowers, balloons, T-shirts, cookies, and/or stickers. When pressed, the G people would simply say, "It's something unexpected," a nod to the store's slogan, quote, "Something unexpected," unquote. The store became a staple of the mall and participated in the Partners in Education program with Waterloo Schools throughout the years. But by 2014, losses began to mount. In March 2017, Gordman's declared bankruptcy and announced stores would be liquidated, a step that usually leads to dissolution of the company and closing of stores. But the Waterloo store was one of 57 stores that continued operating. Same-store sales fell more than 9% in the most recently reported quarter. The company announced job cuts in January, citing the sluggish retail environment. Gordman's parent company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in May in order to explore restructuring options, but challenging market conditions exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic prevented the retailer from obtaining financing to continue operating stores. Going out of business sales are underway at all Gordman's stores. About a month ago, signs appearing at the store stating it was going out of business. Calls and emails to Gordman's corporate office, as well as Crossroads Center staff, were not returned Thursday. At your service. And this article opens up with a photograph of Gail Greer next to the sign that has her name on it in the Hy-Vee where she's employed. This article is filed by Melody Parker of the Courier. Waterloo. The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others, Mahatma Gandhi said. Gail Greer does just that. Greer is the human resources manager at Logan Avenue and Ansboro Avenue Hy-Vee stores. Although her job is to handle employee-related issues, she was always willing to jump in where she's needed, whether it's taking grocery orders, assisting customers, or spearheading involvement in a community project, promotion, or fundraiser. Her passion for hard work and desire to put people first has not gone unnoticed. Earlier this month, Greer received Hy-Vee's Legendary Customer Service Award. Only 9 winners were selected from among more than 85,000 Hy-Vee employees across 8 states. The award recognizes exemplary achievement, providing service that exceeds customers' expectations, according to a press release. Fellow employees, her family, customers, and Hy-Vee executives gathered at the Logan Avenue store in early September to surprise her with the award. Quote, "It's such an honor and very humbling. I share this with my many co-workers. It's a team effort, and we need to make sure our customers are served well and continue to be loyal to our stores. I do what I can to make it work. Being able to serve the staff and our customers, that's what I've really tried to do the entire time I've been in this role. It's so humbling that they thought I was worthy of this award," unquote, said Greer, who has worked for Hy-Vee for 10.5 years. Greer knew she had been nominated for the award, but she had no idea she was a recipient. When arriving back at the Logan Avenue store after a 3-hour meeting, she still had no inkling co-workers, family, customers, and corporate representatives had organized festivities and rolled out the red carpet in her honor. Greer had to put on her glasses to clearly see the folks gathered, clapping and shouting, and store manager Lucas Glasgow and others gave her a shove through the door. "They were pulling me in and I was resisting. I didn't know what was going on," she said. Then she saw her parents. "My mom came down the red carpet with her arms wide open," Greer recalled. "Being able to share that moment with my parents the two people who are responsible for the whole thing was icing on the cake. Greer credits her parents, Henry and Sonora Wallachan of Waterloo, for her work ethic and devotion to other people. My parents really laid the foundation for our family that service is very important. Serving the community, serving people, and working hard. That was instilled in us, unquote. Logan Avenue Hy-Vee manager of store operations, Ben Hovey, wrote in his nomination that Gail will go out of her way to help a customer, truly living up to the Hy-Vee philosophy, that if there is a fire in the store and a customer needs assistance, she will help the customer first, then put out the fire. A Waterloo native, Greer is plugged into the community and can identify needs in areas where Hy-Vee can get involved, including being the store's Partners in Education liaison with George Washington Carver Academy. As an HR manager, Gail works to make Hy-Vee an inclusive workplace. Quote, it's important because we're looking at a society that has to be inclusive of diversity in so many different ways, whether it's race, gender, religion, age, or physical barriers. We are open to making sure our staff looks like our customers, she said. Her efforts have contributed to Hy-Vee being named Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services' top employer in Iowa. Quote, Gail's biggest contribution is that she is a voice of reason, unquote. Salu Timbo, Hy-Vee's Vice President of Community and Diversity Relations and former store director of the Logan Avenue Hy-Vee, wrote in his nomination, quote, she would often counsel me and other leaders on our business approach within the Waterloo community. The topics could include everything ranging from item selection, community outreach, donations, partnerships, and sales promotions. She kept us in tune with the Waterloo community. This instilled pride in the employees and our loyal Hy-Vee customers, unquote. The award includes induction into Hy-Vee's Customer Service Hall of Fame, a legendary customer service name badge, custom-designed ring, crystal trophy, and a free trip of her choice. Greer's helpful smile will be among winners' photos prominently featured on the side of Hy-Vee trucks as well. Greer is thrilled her Hy-Vee stores are getting exposure. Quote, the community is learning how much we care. We give a high level of customer service. It's not just me, it's all of us. I share this award with my co-workers at both stores. Let's turn to the Cedar Valley page. Study, Waverly Needs Rental Housing, filed by Amy Rivers. Waverly, the city of Waverly needs more market rate and low-income rental housing, according to a new study from a regional economic development group. The Waverly City Council voted unanimously Monday to accept the 2020 Housing Needs Assessment prepared by the Iowa Northland Regional Council of Governments, which advises local governments in a 6-county region. Rose Phillips, a housing planner with the INRCOG, who put together the document, said a couple of things in the report stuck out to her. One was that Waverly's housing market seemed soft in comparison with other cities, though she said modest starter homes sell quickly in town. But another finding showed Waverly needed more types of rental housing, particularly for moderate and low-income residents. Quote, the city's had a lot of rental construction since the last housing needs assessment was produced in 2014, Phillips said. That study predicted Waverly would need 139 more rental units by 2020, and developers added 178 units, according to the latest assessment. Quote, but remarkably, that does not appear to have flooded the market, unquote, Phillips said. Quote, there is still rental demand, both for market rate rentals and certainly for below market rate rentals. The new study recommends Waverly add at least 149 rental units by 2030, with 114 of those at market rates. Quote, what struck me as I was reading through this was the conclusion that we are not meeting our demand for moderately priced housing in Waverly, and we should be looking at some ways to be able to provide that, said Council Member Rodney Drenkow, advocating for the council to address the study at a planning session. Council member Brian Bergen said affordable housing was, quote, tied in to economic development. Quote, if they can't find housing in Waverly, it's hard to find workers in Waverly. So that's one of the driving forces behind the need for affordable housing, Bergen said. William Werger, Director of Community and Economic Development, noted the study will be discussed at the next Economic Development Commission meeting. Council member Matthew Schneider said he was in favor of anything to encourage developers to build those units. Quote, we do need to, at some point, have a discussion about looking for every way to, or anything possible, to reduce costs for builders and encourage builders to come in, Schneider said. Poll. Iowans agree on the need for small business pandemic aid, filed by James Lynch of the Courier Des Moines Bureau. Iowa supporters of President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden agree on the need for Congress to provide more assistance to help small businesses weather the coronavirus pandemic. A September 8th to 10th poll of 500 likely Iowa voters found 95% of Biden enthusiasts and 94% of Trump's backers agreed it's important for Congress to implement a small business agenda to keep businesses open and Iowans employed. Quote, Iowans have made it clear they need additional government support, without which we risk losing these businesses and, over time, communities, a Goldman Sachs spokesman said about the survey results. The poll was conducted by David Binder Research for Goldman Sachs' 10,000 Small Business Voices, an initiative to help small business owners advocate for policy changes that help them, their employees, and their communities. The pandemic has decimated small businesses, which employ nearly half of all Americans, according to the Census Bureau. Many stayed afloat in the early stages of business shutdowns by drawing down cash reserves. George Washington University economics professor Stephen Hamilton said, by July, more than 400,000 small businesses had closed, and he warned small business closures could be 50% higher than at the peak of the Great Recession. However, prospects for another round of COVID-19 relief, including assistance for small businesses, are not great. Quote, next to nil was Senator Chuck Grassley's assessment of the likelihood of more relief being approved before Congress adjourns for the election. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's promise to keep the House in session until something is approved offered him little encouragement. Quote, they're going to have to pass something that's a lot better than even what the bipartisan group put together yesterday that she rejected, he said. Pelosi turned down a $1.5 trillion, quote, middle ground, unquote, package from the Problem Solvers Caucus, 25 GOP and 25 Democratic representatives. It would have provided another round of stimulus checks, boosted unemployment insurance, and aid for state and local governments. Based on indicators from the Trump administration, a compromise, quote, might have a chance, unquote, Grassley said. There have been suggestions the president might accept a $1.5 trillion package. Binder found broad recognition among voters, 88% of Biden voters and 90% of Trump voters, of the importance of small business to the economy. The poll also found 77% think the small business community is overlooked by Congress, and 61% said those businesses have not received enough pandemic assistance. And 73% said without that assistance, the pandemic will result in big businesses having an even larger advantage over small businesses. Recreation renovation. Elk Run Heights aims to boost recreation in city with revamp of Mayor's Park, filed by Kristen Guess. And it opens up with a photograph of Lisa Smock standing next to a sign at Mayor's Park. And the caption says, Elk Run Heights Council Member Lisa Smock stands in front of the sign at Mayor's Park on Thursday morning. Elk Run Heights. Residents will have a lot to cheer about next year at the town's 75th anniversary celebration. City officials are planning a major renovation to Mayor's Park, as well as Bunger Park in Evansdale. The joint project is estimated to cost more than $700,000. Quote, "The park is beautiful, and we want to get the most out of it," said Elk Run Heights Mayor Christy Lundy. Thanks to a $428,000 grant from Iowa's Transportation Alternatives Program and other funding from REAP and the Land and Water Conservation Fund, the park will add a walking trail, dog park, restrooms, and pedestrian bridge, among other upgrades. The estimated month-long construction project is slated to begin in the spring of 2021. Sitting on McCoy Road across the street from Elk Run Preschool, Mayor's Park currently has three shelters, two playgrounds, two ball diamonds, and a basketball and tennis court. The planned one-mile asphalt trail will run along Elk Run Creek and across new pedestrian bridge, creating a loop with a small portion reaching Bunger Park in Evansdale. The path will be wheelchair accessible. Quote, "That will be a good safe place for our residents to walk. We have a lot of residents that walk in the area, but we don't have a lot of sidewalks," Lundy said. The dog park will be located across the street at Bunger Park. Fundraisers for the park include the second annual Howlin' Halloween Dog Walk, set October 17th. A walking bridge will be added up the creek from Park Suspension Bridge, which was built in the 1960s, said Elk Run Heights Council Member Lisa Smock. Boulder seating will be added along the shores of the creek, as well as picnic tables. Smock has been working to promote the project on several committees over the past few years. As a fifth-term council member, Smock said she is passionate about the project. Quote, "Parks are what small towns have to offer. It's our biggest asset for residents to come together and have a place to enjoy our space," she said. Initial designs of the restrooms include environmentally friendly features, including slanted roofs so rainwater can be reused for toilet flushing, and the utilization of natural light instead of electricity. An educational pollinator garden will be planted where the second ball diamond now sits. A creek cleanup project is planned for the spring. In the future, Smock said, officials plan to add a memorial garden and frisbee golf course to the park. Elk Run Heights celebrates its anniversary every 5 years in the late summer. Lundy said the pandemic will determine the details of next year's event. Quote, "COVID could still be in existence next summer, but we're hoping that we're through the pandemic and we can safely have a summer celebration," she said. Absentee ballot box installed outside courthouse. Waterloo. An absentee ballot drop box has been installed outside of the public entrance to the Black Hawk County Courthouse. The box is securely bolted to the sidewalk and is double locked. It is under 24-hour security camera surveillance. Absentee ballots will be mailed to voters who request them starting on October 5th. Voters may return the postage-paid ballots by mail, by personal delivery to the election office, or the drop box at the courthouse, or via a third party. If a voter designates someone to deliver or mail the ballot for them, they may ask the person for a receipt. Voters may also vote in person at the election office, 316 East 5th Street in Waterloo, starting October 5th. After October 5th, the drop box will be emptied a minimum of 3 times a day by election office staff. Voters may also use the drop box to drop off absentee ballot request forms. The box is available for that use immediately. For questions, contact the election office at this phone number, 833-3007, or email to election@co.black-hawk.ia.us. No need to wipe everything to protect yourself from coronavirus, filed by the Tribune News Service. If you're wiping down every single Amazon package, can of chickpeas, and takeout container at the start of the pandemic, you certainly weren't alone. Clorox, the world's biggest maker of disinfectant cleaning materials, says it's still recovering from high demand of its popular disinfectant wipes, not expected to return to shelves until 2021. In the beginning, we were all encouraged to take every precaution that we could. But do we still need to sanitize everything in sight? With months of research now behind us, experts say the answer is probably not. Yet that doesn't mean surfaces present zero risk. Here's how to approach things now. Wash your hands, not your packages. By now, we know that the virus is thought to spread mainly from person to person, and experts agree that your time is better spent washing your hands after you return from the grocery store than wiping down every item brought home. Why? While it's theoretically possible that there's fomite-related transmission through contaminated surfaces, we're not seeing any cases reported that are directly linked to that, says Patricia Henward, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at Thomas Jefferson University's Sidney Kimmel Medical College and leader of the Emergency Medicine COVID-19 Task Force at Jefferson Health. When you're done putting your groceries away, wash your hands again, and then apply that same mindset as you move throughout your life. Pumping gas, wash your hands, or use sanitizer immediately after. It's more effective and more important than later wiping down your steering wheel. Experts say the likelihood of getting coronavirus from a delivery box is low, but always remember to wash your hands before eating. If your hands are contaminated and you touch your face, you could get sick. Experts say it's a good idea to regularly wipe down your cell phone, and if someone else borrows it, then you definitely should. It's like when you wear a cloth mask to the grocery store and you wash it before using it again because there could be virus particles on the outside. Your phone could be the same way, particularly because it's up against your face, said Sweet. You may also want to disinfect your doorknobs, especially if you share an entrance with others outside of your household. And if you're returning to an office or sharing equipment, elevate your cleaning efforts. But again, the surface you need to be most concerned about is the one on your hands. Cedar Falls. A Cedar Falls man has been arrested for allegedly having sexual contact with children. Police arrested 29-year-old Roman Casey Gray Bezik, also known as Tenko Julius Wild, of 2216 Lincoln Street, on Wednesday, on four counts of second-degree sexual abuse and one count of indecent contact with a child. Bond was set at $175,000. Police said the charges stem from incidents involving two children over a number of years. Cedar Falls police received a tip about possible sexual abuse from the Iowa Department of Human Services on Monday. The children were interviewed at the Allen Child Protection Center. Second-degree sexual abuse is punishable by up to 25 years in prison upon conviction. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, September 18th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Cheryl S. Love, 72, of Gladbrook, formerly of Waterloo, died Tuesday, September 15th, 2020, at Westbrook Acres in Gladbrook. She was born October 17, 1947, in Waterloo, daughter of Vernon and Marilyn Carlisle Imes. She graduated from Waterloo West High School. Cheryl married Kenneth D. Love on January 15, 1971, in Waterloo. He preceded her in death in 2003. She ran her own in-home daycare and worked in the cafeteria at Lincoln Elementary School in Waterloo. Cheryl enjoyed reading and cooking. A public visitation will be held from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. on Saturday, September 19, 2020, at Garden View Chapel, 3655 Logan Avenue, Waterloo. The first hour reserved for the elderly and vulnerable. The family requests that masks be worn. Memorials directed to the family. Burial will be later at Garden of Memories Cemetery in Waterloo. Visit www.kernfuneralservices.com for more information. Edith Eddie Miller, 73, of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, September 17th, at Unity Point Allen Memorial Hospital. She was born April 11, 1947, in Cedar Falls, daughter of Elmer and Johanna Campman. She married Ernie Miller on February 4, 2000, in Cedar Falls. She graduated from Cedar Falls High School in 1965, attended Hawkeye Community College in Upper Iowa, where she earned her BA in Nursing Home Administration. She worked as a nurse's aide, bookkeeper, and truck driver, employed by Barum Convalescent Home, Harmony House, EPI, and PCI. She was a member of Black Hawk County Button Club and loved to play cards at Cedar Falls Community Center. Services are 11 a.m. Saturday, September 19th, at Richardson Funeral Service. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home, and also for 1 hour prior to the service. Memorials may be directed to the family. Condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. James Jim Arnold Asher, 74, of Wellsburg, entered his heavenly home on Monday, September 14, 2020. Following Jim's wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. There will be a public outside visitation held from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. on Friday, September 18, 2020, at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church premise located by Wellsburg. A celebration of Jim's life will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, September 19, 2020, also at the St. Paul's Lutheran Church premise. Private family interment to follow the service. Memorial contributions may be directed in Jim's name to his family. For further information, please visit www.ablesfuneralhomes.com. Jim was born on June 24, 1946, at the family home east of Wellsburg, the son of August and Anna Christians Asher. He received his education in the Wellsburg Community School District, graduating with the class of 1964. Following graduation, Jim worked construction for Gethman Construction and at Mid Equipment, which led to a life of farming on the family farm. Jim was united in marriage to Diane Faye Workman on June 20, 1975, at the Holland Christian Reformed Church. They were blessed with two children, Sarah Asher McMartin and Michael James Asher. Jim was a member of the St. Paul's Lutheran Church in rural Grundy County. He was an avid fisherman and took joy going on many trips with dear friends and family. They said there was not a fish too big or too small he could not snag unless he was with his grandchildren, who enjoyed getting the biggest or the first catch. Jim could also be spotted, no matter sunshine, heat, cold, rain, sleet, or snow, on the sidewalks, cheering on those who loved so dear. Iris June Saul Henson, 98, of Cedar Falls, died Tuesday, September 15, 2020, at Martin Suites at Western Home Communities. She was born March 5, 1922, in Black Hawk County, to Dave and May Saul. Iris married Leonard Hansen on January 24, 1942, in Missouri. She is survived by her son, Ray Hansen, of Dubuque, and her daughter, Karen Heidemann, of Janesville, Iowa. 7 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, 10 great-great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. Iris was preceded in death by her husband, Leonard, on January 14, 2008. A son, Rex Leonard Hansen, a grandson, Rex Leonard Hansen, Jr., 5 brothers and 3 sisters. She had many wonderful years married to Leonard. They enjoyed many things together: fishing trips to Minnesota, square dancing, ballroom dancing, card playing, bowling, and family get-togethers, whether it was for holidays, a fish fry, or attending sporting events for grandchildren. A private gathering was held at Dahl Van Hove Sioux Funeral Home, with burial at Glenwood Cemetery in Cedar Falls. Brett Wood, 57, of Dysart, passed away peacefully on the evening of Saturday, September 12, 2020, while under the care of Cedar Valley Hospice and in the comfort of his home, surrounded by his family. Following Brett's wishes, cremation rites have been accorded, and there will be no public services held at this time. Memorial contributions may be directed in Brett's name to Cedar Valley Hospice, St. Jude's, and or the Humane Society. For further information, or to send a condolence, please visit www.ablesfuneralhomes.com. Fringe Hand Funeral Home is caring for Brett and his family. Brett Wood was born on December 14, 1962, in Waterloo, the son of Edward Jr. and Shirley B.B. Wood. He was raised and educated in the Waterloo School District, where he graduated from Waterloo West High School. Following his graduation, Brett went on to obtain his associate's degree from Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo. Brett was a hardworking man, dedicated much of his career life as a gunsmith. His passion for work showed with his hobbies as well. Brett had a love for fishing, hunting, and spending quality time with his family and dogs. Left to cherish Brett's memory are his parents, Ed and Shirley Wood, one sister, Denise Bovey, one niece, Nicole Bovey, three nephews, Christopher Bovey, Alex Bovey, and Tyler Bovey, one great-niece, Erica Bovey, and one great-nephew, Lucas Bovey. Brett is preceded in death by his maternal and paternal grandparents. Medical marijuana dispensary license approved for Coralville, filed by Aaron Jordan. A state-licensed medical marijuana dispensary may open in Coralville, which would be the first. The Iowa Department of Public Health announced Thursday it plans to award two new medical marijuana dispensary licenses, one to the Iowa Cannabis Company East in Coralville, and one to the Cannabis Patient Network in Council Bluffs. The firms have until Friday to accept. Otherwise, the state could choose among five other applications, including two in Cedar Rapids and two others in the Iowa City area, that met the state's minimum criteria. The new licenses follow the March closures of dispensaries in Davenport and Council Bluffs. The state still has licensed dispensaries in Waterloo, Sioux City, and Windsor Heights, Iowa. Law allows only five dispensary licenses. There have been other setbacks this year for medical marijuana entrepreneurs in Iowa. Iowa Relief, a medical marijuana manufacturer in Cedar Rapids, closed earlier this year and turned in its license. It was one of two manufacturers licensed in Iowa to produce the medical marijuana products sold to qualifying patients at the dispensaries. The other is MedFarm of Iowa in Des Moines. Iowa Relief, owned by New Jersey-based Acreage Holdings, produced capsules, topical ointments, and tinctures for the state's medical cannabinol program for less than a year. Companies interested in Iowa's medical marijuana program have said it won't take off until lawmakers allow higher levels of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the compound that produces a high feeling. Last summer, the Iowa legislature passed, and Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law House File 2589, which removed a 3% THC limit on products, but replaced it with a limit of 4.5 grams of THC per 90-day purchase, with some exceptions. A year earlier, Reynolds vetoed a bill that would have lifted the cap and allowed 25 grams of THC in 90 days. The new law also added, for 2020, post-traumatic stress disorder and severe autism as conditions qualifying for medical marijuana. This is the Metro Briefs column. Basketball team plans fundraiser, Waterloo. The Waterloo Salvation Army basketball teams are holding a car wash to raise funds for their basketball program from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at the Salvation Army, 89 Franklin Street. Free will donations will be taken. Cedar Falls Library accredited, Cedar Falls. The State Library of Iowa has announced that Cedar Falls Public Library has met the conditions for Tier 3 state accreditation. This is the highest level achievable. Tier 3 libraries receive more state funding to reduce inequities in the delivery of library services. The Cedar Falls Library uses the aid to provide materials and services to older residents. This accreditation is valid through June 30th, 2023. 40 under 40 honor given. Waterloo. Production supervisor Travis Krieger, an Advanced Heat Treat Corporation employee since 1997, has been selected for Heat Treat Today's 40 Under 40 Award. The award recognizes young leaders in the heat treat industry. The industry serves manufacturers in agriculture, aerospace, automotive, construction, firearms, and more. Baptist pastor, wife honored. Waterloo. Community Southern Baptist Church will honor the Reverend Ted and Sarah Keyes for 44 years of service during the 11 a.m. service Sunday at 522 Anthony Street. The public may attend. Winter wear donors needed. Waterloo. From now through October 9th, donation of coats and winter outerwear are now being collected at all Veridian Credit Union branches in the Cedar Valley and at the Salvation Army's office at 89 Franklin Street. Donations of new or gently used clean coats, hats, scarves, and gloves will be matched to individuals in need. New this year, those needing a coat are asked to complete an online registration form. Requests will be reviewed by the Salvation Army. If the items are available, they will be packaged by Veridian volunteers and distributed by appointment. These measures are in place to limit the amount of in-person contact as safety precautions against the COVID-19 pandemic. The registration form can be found at www.veridiancu.org/givewarmth. Those needing assistance in completing the form can also contact the Salvation Army at this phone number, 235-9358. Let's turn now to the sports page with an article about prep cross country, Cedar Falls Tigers. Cedar Falls, and this story opens up with a wide angle photograph of all the women starting the Rich Engel Classic cross country meet Division B girls race. It's underway Thursday in Cedar Falls. Cedar Falls, when Brady Hogan crossed the finish line at the annual Rich Engel Cross Country Invitational, he was not quite sure if he had crossed in time. The senior from Decorah was in a shoulder-to-shoulder race with Cedar Falls Tigers junior Alex Horseman most of the night. But it was Hogan who crossed first in a time of 16 minutes, 19.4 seconds, a full 5 seconds ahead of Horseman. Quote, I tried to kick it in twice and pass him, Hogan said, referring to Horseman. Quote, I finally got around him at the top of the hill and let the hammer go. I knew he was still right there, but I just had to keep pushing because I feel I can win each time I run. For Horseman, it was an exciting race that he felt he could win, but knew he had to be at his best because he fell to Hogan last year as well. I really worked hard all summer to get in my best shape, not just physically, but in the mindset as well, said Horseman. Quote, I knew he was on my heels the whole way, and when he passed me down the stretch, he just zoomed by me. I was waiting for him to slow just a little, but he kicked it in, and it was tight, and I gave it my best. I was happy to see that the rest of the guys finished strong to help get first place, unquote. Horstman was making a nod to the rest of his squad as the Tigers had 7 runners finish in the top 10 as Cedar Falls cruised to the boys' title, scoring 20 points, with Southeast Polk a distant second with 115. On the girls' course, Ankeny took first place honors with 77 points on the strength of Lauren McMahon, top finish of 18 minutes 42.6. The men's race was a tight one from start to finish, as Horseman and Hogan had great jumps to start and pushed each other to the end. Quote, we talked about how we wanted to come in here and compete with some of these big 4A schools, said Hogan of his Vikings teammates. Quote, we had good scouting reports on Cedar Falls and this course, and we felt good as a team coming down here to run, unquote. The Vikings finished 5th overall with 164 points. The Tiger pack that finished behind Horseman and Hogan were Michael Gudenbauer, 3rd place, T.J. Tomlanovich, 4th, Bryden Burnett, 5th, and Joe Burris, 6th. Eli Smith took 8th, and Cooper Olson finished 9th. Cedar Falls boys head coach Scott Gall was impressed with his team's performance. "These guys are really a strong group," said Gall. "They work so hard together and compete every day and do what they have to do. We got off to a pretty fast start today, and sometimes you can get off to too much of a fast start. Alex Horseman was the type of athlete that can win whenever he wants to. He sticks his nose in there and fights hard," added Gall. Quote, "All these guys are competitive, and I hope they can remember how fun this all was so they can reflect back on these days as they get older," unquote. Decorah made a big splash on the girls' side, with Rebecca Anderson grabbing a fourth-place ribbon, finishing just 8 seconds behind McMahon. "My coach gave me a goal to reach, and I felt pretty good finishing the way I did," said Anderson. "It was fun coming down here and running with the best teams and athletes, and I was excited for the way it went. This course challenges you a little because it repeats itself and is a little more flat than the one back home. Back home is much hillier and really challenges you." For the Tiger girls, Amira Little was the first athlete across for the home team with a time of 20 minutes, 27.4, good enough for 13th place. Iowa football. Delayed season begins in 5 weeks, and it opens with a photograph of Iowa coach Kurt Ferentz as he watches from the sideline during the second half of his team's Holiday Bowl NCAA college football game against College California in San Diego. Iowa City. Although the opponent remains unknown, Iowa football coach Kurt Ferentz said Thursday he already feels like the countdown to kickoff has started. Quote, "We don't have any wiggle room for a bad day," unquote, Ferentz said during a video conference. Quote, "We have to make every play and every snap count. It will be a matter of maximizing what you can do," unquote. The Hawkeyes' delayed 2020 season will begin in 5 weeks, the first of 8 regular season games scheduled for all Big Ten teams on the weekend of October 23rd. Director of Athletics Gary Bartha said the Iowa schedule, as well as those for all Big Ten teams, remains a work in progress as conversations with the conference's television partners continue. Bartha did say he expects the possibility of Big Ten teams being involved in more Friday night games and more primetime games than in past years when the league schedule is unveiled in upcoming days. Ferentz is simply satisfied knowing that a team that began its off-season training in January finally has a season to work toward. He said, delivering the news Wednesday, that the Big Ten Council of Presidents and Chancellors had approved plans to play football this fall was one of the more enjoyable sessions he has had with his Iowa team. Quote, "It's good to be talking football. There's been some uncertainty for everyone going back to March," Ferentz said. Quote, "It was good to get some clarity where we're going as a football conference. It was exciting for our players." Ferentz said the announcement created a whole different vibe for everybody, unquote. The Hawkeyes will have a different, entirely different approach on the practice field beginning next week. With plans for a season in place, the Hawkeyes are now allowed 20 hours of practice time each week, up from the 12 hours they have been limited to since the start of fall semester classes on August 24th. On September 30th, the same date that a standardized required testing regimen for the coronavirus begins for all Big Ten teams, Iowa football players will put on pads for the first time since December 27th, when the Hawkeyes routed USC 49-24 in the Holiday Bowl. He said the situation will create a different starting point for this Iowa team. Quote, "We have some challenges from a football standpoint," unquote, Ferentz said. Quote, "We have a short amount of time. We will have to maximize every opportunity," unquote. While Iowa does less contact work and practices now than it did early in Ferentz's 22-year tenure, the physical part of the game is still something the Hawkeyes will work on and prepare for even in a coronavirus-impacted world. Quote, "You can't play this game sitting in a chair," Ferentz said, saying the exact amount of contact work will take place is still being figured out as plans are formalized. The heavy-duty workload will likely be less than in normal fall camp settings, as coaches are cognizant of soft tissue injuries that may be more prevalent because of how everything has been structured this year. Quote, "We'll do what is best for the team and try to get them ready to play," Farron said. "Everybody is working with the same guidelines. The challenges we have are the same challenges 13 other schools are facing right now," unquote. Farron said a very small number of Hawkeyes may choose to opt out of the current season. Quote, "There have been some concerns expressed, but there are no formal announcements to make at this point," Farron said. Farron expects the 2020 season to be different in so many ways, extending beyond the shortened schedule, the delayed start, and the myriad of medical protocols surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. That includes playing games without fans in the stands, something he has mixed feelings about. Quote, "On the road, that's great. At home, it will feel kind of weird," Farron said. "Normally at Kinnick, you come out of the tunnel and experience the swarm with all of those fans. You'll miss that. It will be an adjustment," unquote. There will be no fans in the stands at Kinnick Stadium this season. Farron did say that one tradition will continue. Players and game officials will take time at the end of the first quarter of the Hawkeyes' 4 home games to participate in the Kinnick Wave, waving to patients at the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital, located across the street from the stadium. In the Metro Roundup, we have West takes down New Hampton in 4 games, filed by Jim Nelson. New Hampton. The Waterloo West volleyball team went on the road and scored a 25-20, 22-25, 25-10, 25-20 non-conference win over New Hampton Thursday. Sarah Williams led Wahawks 3-4 with 17 kills, while Riley Hundley and Gabby Moore each had strong defensive efforts with 18 digs apiece. Hallie Pook had 34 assists, while Jada Geyser had 4 solo blocks and 1 assisted block over West. The Wahawks will host their own invitational beginning at 9 a.m. Saturday, with Metro Schools, Cedar Falls, and East among the contestants. Regents fall in 4. Dunkerton topped Waterloo Christian in a tight Iowa Star Conference match, 25-15, 25-20, 21-25, and 25-20. Freshman Reagan Wheeler led the Regents 5-4 with 11 kills. Amber Smith and Sidra Wheeler added 8 and 7, respectively. Lauren Bergstrom had 29 assists. Quote, "It was a battle the entire time," Regent coach Angela Evans said. "We fought hard, just had a few more errors than we would have liked," unquote. Emmy predictions are folly. Stipulated, Watchmen will win the Emmy Award for Best Limited Series, and Regina King, its indomitable center, will be honored at Sunday's largely virtual ceremony hosted by Jimmy Kimmel. Almost everything else about the 72nd Primetime Emmy Awards is a question mark, including how smoothly the pandemic-constrained telecast, 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time on ABC, will unfold. The show's producers were still working out their final strategy as the TV industry's big night nears, but Housebound nominees, formally dressed or not, will be poised to go live on screen and discover whether they've won or lost. The potential for glitches alone will provide suspense, but so will the honors. With the coronavirus turning so many of us into morose shut-ins, the small screen's wealth of shows and performances has provided a key distraction. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, September 18th. I'm your reader, Bob. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And stay tuned for the reading of today's Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And as always, thanks so much for listening today.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.